Okay, welcome. This is the Developing an Ethnographic Lexicon. My name is Charlie Iverson, and I work at the Science Museum of Minnesota. Today, we're going to talk about lexicons for ethnographic collections, our own experiences, and the larger issue of a need for an accessible standard. So first, a little clarification, because of course there's a wide variety of words that people use to name the set of words that they use to name their collections. All of those listed here: thesaurus, controlled vocabulary, authority table, nomenclature, lexicon. If you look up the dictionary definitions, these all pretty much are called lists of words or sets of words. And when talking about museum collections data, they're used somewhat interchangeably, with the exception of nomenclature, which is pretty much used exclusively to refer to the specific lexicon, Chennault's nomenclature. What we're looking at today are sets of terms with defined hierarchical relationships and synonyms and preferred terms. So for our purposes, we've decided to try to stick with the term lexicon, just for ease. So a little of my background with this subject. Actually, my first job in museums was photocopying catalog cards onto different colored cardstock, cutting them out and reorganizing them in different ways. So you've probably seen these in your museum. I think the ones I did have been thrown out since then, unfortunately. So kind of the paper database, a way of organizing information, cross-indexing. More recently, I spent 8 years working at the Western Archaeological Conservation Center in Arizona, which is a repository for National Park Service museum collections. In that position, I spent a lot of time standardizing data. They hold 4 million objects from over 50 different parks, each park with its own slightly different naming scheme for archaeology and anthropology, or ethnology. I guess we're using anthropology as the overarching term, which includes archaeology and ethnology. So in that position, a park would send a group of objects to be held at the repository. It could be just a couple of surface-collected pottery sherds, or all the way up to a semi-truck full of furniture. And then we'd get the accompanying electronic records, which were loaded into the regional database for the center, and then my job was to make sure all of the data fit together. And then part of that was also transferring the information back to the parks and explaining to them the changes and helping them to establish the same standards at the parks. So I got a lot of experience working with different terms and that people are using. When I started at the Science Museum 6 years ago, I came into the tail end of a digitization project. They had just gotten a rediscovery database to replace their old system, and they were working through a lot of issues. Through that project, it became clear that the in-house created lexicon would no longer work within the structure of the new database. So, I'm currently working on an IMLS grant-supported inventory and digitization project of our Plains Indian ethnographic material. In our initial grant proposal, we actually built in time specifically to work on the lexicon, to look at the standardized terms and to just kind of sort it out. The big fields we looked at were object name, cultural affiliation, locality, and materials. For me, the most difficult and fascinating part was the object names and their classification. So I did a lot of research, contacted colleagues to try and find out what was being done for ethnographic lexicons. I was a little bit insulated when I was working at the National Park Service, kind of have their own way of doing things, and I was really curious to see what people out in the world had come up with. But really quickly, it was clear that there wasn't anything. There weren't standards, and everyone else was just creating their own. So throughout this presentation, I'm going to talk about the general issues with ethnographic object names and lexicon creation, as well as the background of what we've done at the Science Museum of Minnesota. So I'm going to be using baby carriers to illustrate my points, and all the collection photos you're going to see are a variety of objects that came up in the Science Museum collection related to kind of baby carrying. So if we look back, the systematic ethnographic collections in the United States began really in earnest in the late 19th century when anthropology was emerging as a discipline. The basis of the Science Museum of Minnesota's collection as it is today was developed in 1910, and collections were really starting to be organized in the 1930s. These are examples of some early collections documentation and how terms have evolved over time, including ones we would no longer consider to be appropriate. And it's really important to acknowledge that the history of collecting ethnographic material is really linked to the history of colonialism, which is a really much broader conversation. But part of my interest in all this is to see the core management of the collections reflect all of the kind of decolonization efforts that are going on in more public arenas like exhibitions and education. So we have to look at how the terms are varying across institutions, but also how terms have changed and evolved over time. So I'm going to use one example from our collection, which in the first record that I could find in the top is referred to as one beaded squaw hood, which is a completely inappropriate term that we would definitely no longer use. And then the next place, it has been changed to Indian hood in a typewritten list of catalog numbers, just sequential list and what they were called, or what the numbers have been assigned to. So another system that evolved, just like most museums did, multiple record-keeping systems over time, were the catalog sheets. So in this case, we have really beautiful hand-colored drawings, diagrams, precise measurements, extremely detailed description. And now you can maybe read that the name has changed to baby carrier, comma, beaded. Also, these catalog sheets are in binders organized by subject. And the subjects are based on the human relations area file, which I'll talk a little bit about later. It's an example of an early system of cross-indexing at the museum by function. So the baby carrier is behind the tab 854, infant care, baby carrier. Now we've got the typed catalog cards with very minimal information. But newly added here in the record keeping is a space for some collections management information. We have up in the right corner of the card, you can see location, which is exciting, and blank. So it's there, but, you know, not being used. And as I was saying, the catalog cards are often duplicated to be organized in lots of different ways. At the Science Museum, we have one set that's organized by a catalog number, and then one set that's organized by subject. And here's the drawer for this, where this card is behind the subject of infant care. So, and the subjects are still a little more loosely aligned with the human relations area file also. And that's the first photograph I could find. Now, excitement of computers. So the early computerized systems, there were a lot of restrictions on what could be entered. They were cumbersome, internal use only, and initially just for fiduciary responsibility. But there was a lot of excitement, mass digitization efforts, with no way to control what was being entered into the fields, and often entered directly from the cards. At least that was the case at the Science Museum. So there's minimal information in these early records. Lots of museums ended up with records in their databases with bunch of different terms and minimal information attached to them and formatted in lots of different ways. In the mid-1980s, we got relational databases. So there are more fields, you could put longer entries, and you could organize and search in lots of different ways. So this is the beginning of the data cleanup, an effort to begin to standardize the fields. And more recently, the big change is online collections. So databases and information being pushed directly online. So many different users can directly access the information. So in the past, as an internal user or staff, you could kind of get to know the quirks and the language that your institution was using. But now the lack of standardization means that people have more difficulty finding what they're looking for across various databases. To try to put some order into museum records with the advent of computers, a couple of big lexicons were developed. So we've got Chenal's nomenclature. It was initially created for history museums in 1978. The categories are based on function, and it's available as a printed book and now as a spreadsheet file, I believe. It's sporadically updated, and this year the fourth edition came out, shown here, nomenclature 4.0. There's also the Getty Art and Architecture Thesaurus. It was initially created for art libraries in 1990. It has different ways of categorizing form, function, design, context, and et cetera. It's available online and refreshed every 2 weeks. It does include definitions of terms, which I found to be really, really useful. Some other lexicons that are out there. National Park Service Museum Handbook. It outlines some object terms and standards. The Human Relations Area Files, which I was talking about before, was developed for anthropology research, a way of indexing written ethnographies. Library of Congress subject headings for library cataloging. And then there's a couple of lexicons designed in-house at some larger institutions that are available online for reference. We've got the American Museum of Natural History and the National Museum of the American Indian. So the existing lexicon that was at the Science Museum when I arrived is shown here with a lot of notes from our previous database administrator. The created lexicon didn't follow a structure that would work with our new database of Rediscovery. Rediscovery couldn't accommodate the same term in different fields, and it also couldn't accommodate varying levels of classification and had to have a fixed number of classification levels. We also didn't have any documentation about how this lexicon was developed. So it was really difficult to decide where to place new terms. Some of the categories were by function, and some of them were by material, and there was a variety of, it was really difficult, basically. Didn't work. So you can remember from the catalog card of our sample object, it was listed as baby carrier, filed under infant care previously. So with this lexicon, which was from the, we had Argus before Rediscovery, which is from Argus, the object name is still baby carrier, but it's now it's categorized under container, which is a new shift. So in trying to develop something for moving forward, I looked at the two big published lexicons to see if one of them might work as a reference. On the top, we've got nomenclature 4.0. The object name here would be carrier, comma, child, with some secondary terms available, and the classification of land transportation, human-powered vehicles, which got a lot of raised eyebrows at some meetings. and on the bottom, we've got the Art and Architecture Thesaurus. The closest names I could find were kind of baby slings and cradle boards. So we do have cradle boards, but I didn't see something that would really work as a more general term to encompass all of kind of baby-carrying devices, like the ones that I've been showing. But it's also notable that neither of these lexicons contain the term we had been using, which was baby carrier, which was interesting. So we ended up, in the end, choosing to base our new lexicon on nomenclature, using AAT as a reference with the definitions. Partially because the previous terms were mostly based on function, and many actually directly aligned with nomenclature. And partially because the structure of nomenclature was easier for us to kind of jam into rediscovery. We ended up deleting the entire previous lexicon out of the database, which involved manually deleting every single entry and every single connection, which is not fun. So here's what the record looks like now with the new lexicon terms in place. We have four interrelated fields. We've got class one of ethnology, because we have ethnology and archaeology in the same section to distinguish it from the archaeology records. And then class two and three in object name are directly from nomenclature. We also added an alt name field, which is an independent table where we could add a more specific term. In this case, cover, comma, cradleboard, following the standard set forth with nomenclature. Excuse me. So in preparing this, I wanted to do a search across some different online collections to see if I could further illustrate the issue of lack of standardization of object names. So the museums I searched are listed across the top, and the various terms I tried are down the left side. Again, using my sample object, which now we're calling carrier, comma, child. So when I searched these for carrier, comma, child, it was quickly clear that none of these institutions use this object name, which was really sad. The Hearst and AMNH use the comma as an or, and so they brought up all the records. These numbers reflect all the records that had either child or carrier, and most of them weren't relevant to what I was looking for. So I thought, okay, what if I try child carrier? Again, no. The Hearst also used the space as an or, and so the exact same records came up. And then in the others, hardly any. Okay, what about baby carrier, the term that we were using previously? So it looked like Penn was using that, Peabody, and AMNH. They all had a pretty good number of hits that were really relevant to what I was actually searching for. And then I was thinking, what's NMAI doing? Like, I'm not finding anything. And then I looked through their published lexicon and realized that they use plural terms. And so I had to enter baby carriers in order to get the listings that I was looking for. Whereas at Penn and AMNH, the plural didn't matter. It brought up the same records, baby carriers and baby carrier. And then I looked at cradle, which is actually more of, through, if you look at the AAT definition, it's more of a furniture term. But it often includes the kinds of objects that I was looking for. At NMNH, it's an index term, and so it's used to bring up a lot of related objects. And it brought up lots of records at Peabody and AMNH that included a lot of baby carriers too. So that term actually brought up the most number of kind of relevant records, but they would have to be searched individually to really find what I was looking for. So in order to try to gather some more information about what others are doing to standardize their data about anthropology collections, we created a SurveyMonkey survey last April before the AAM annual meeting. We reached out to colleagues and asked for help on various listservs, and we ended up getting 74 responses from people that are working directly with anthropology collections. So I'm going to look at some of the more interesting results. So what database management system do you use? As you can see, people are using a wide variety of databases. Of the people who responded, we saw 16 different systems represented, which I was kind of surprised. I knew there were a lot of options out there, but it was to really see that a wide variety are being used for these type of collections was really interesting. Then we had, which standardized terminology system do you use? And in this question, people could choose more than one answer. And it does show that people are using more than one set of terms because we have way more than 100% here. The other responses mostly had comments about making up their own or not knowing what they were using. And one thing that really stood out too was 25% of the respondents said none. And I'm just really, I don't know, I'm curious about what those people are doing. And then we've got, have you developed your own set of standardized terms for any of the following? Object names, culture groups. These high percentages further support the idea that there isn't a standard out there, that people can just pop into their database, that they're making their own. And then particularly striking was, do you share your set of standardized terms with other museums? 87% said no, they don't share their terms. We asked another question if people are willing to share their terms. Only 9 of the 74 people that responded said they were even willing to share. So we don't really know why there's this lack of sharing or why there's this reluctance to share. This is an area where we're trying to do some more investigation, and I'm curious to know what people here think. We did have 30 respondents say they'd like to help with the project, so that was really fantastic. That's a gratuitous picture of my son. So as we've delved into the issue, we've really seen that there's a gap and a need here. We created a lexicon task force under the Registrar's Committee of AAM, and currently we have 7 members and we're looking to grow. We're investigating the issue in greater detail and really trying to determine what might help, which we don't know. Is it a new lexicon? Is it a set of standards or best practices? Is it a way of sharing sample lexicons? So my hope is that we can work together to try and resolve some of the issues. And now I'm going to turn it over to Isabel.